Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast. Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to this week's episode of Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts, Amelia.
And Beth.
Ha 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 ha.
We have a super spooky episode this week.
Extra spooky.
You know, the best part is you had to see Amelia's face when she did that. Nobody else is laughing like I am right now, but it was funny all the same.
So what are we talking about this week?
Well, this week we are talking about haunted burial sites along the Freedom Trail here in Boston, Massachusetts.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. So the Freedom Trail is a huge tourist attraction. And in fact, if you Google, you know, fun things to do in Boston, the Freedom Trail is always number one. So it's like this 2.5 mile journey that you can walk.
It's that long?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I had no idea.
It goes from the Common and it winds its way all the way over to Faneuil Hall and up around the North End. And you go all the way out to Bunker Hill in Charlestown.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's way cool. So we just picked a couple of haunted graveyards and we're going to tell you the stories of them this week. Who went first last week?
I did. The whole episode last week.
Okay, great. So you can go first this week.
It is fitting because my first story is on the King's Chapel burial ground.
Ooh. And why is it fitting that that's first?
Because it was the first cemetery in Boston, Massachusetts.
Wow.
Ba-da-da.
It's teeny tiny, too.
Wicked small. King Chapel's Burying Ground is a historic graveyard on Tremont Street, near the intersection of School Street in Boston, Massachusetts. How historic is it? Pretty historic because it's the oldest one in the entire city, and it was established in 1630. So despite the name, the graveyard predates the adjacent King's Chapel, and that was built in 1688. So it's not affiliated with that at all. And it was actually only a burial ground for 30 years. So it was established by Sir Isaac Johnson. And he was the first guy buried there. And it was because it was part of his property. And the legend has it that he wanted to be buried in his pumpkin patch. So I know, isn't that kind of cute?
That actually is cute.
Yeah. So it was first it was his vegetable garden and then he was buried there. I couldn't find any information about how it went from like burying this one guy in his pumpkin patch to it becoming like the neighborhood cemetery. But that's what happened. So today there are 505 headstones and 59 footstones remaining from the more than 1,000 people buried in the small space since its inception. There are also 78 tombstones.
Wait. There are how many people buried in that little postage stamp there?
1,000.
That's outrageous.
I know.
They must have all been stacked on top of each other. Keep going.
You know, and I was pretty surprised that there were 505 headstones there. I was like,
Yeah, because I've walked by there many, mm-hmm, many, many times. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've never counted the headstones or footstones, mm-hmm, but I am now going to go count.
Lauren was attacked there one night.
Stop.
Did I tell you that? Lauren, who's been on the show before? Yeah, she was working for me at this place down there in the financial district. And she went home on the train one night and like someone attacked her. And after that point, like Mike used to come pick her up every night. Okay. Anyway. Yeah. She's okay. She's okay. Little
That's
startled
horrifying.
For sure. Absolutely. Very startling. It was startling for everyone. And,
cause that's not,
yeah, it was
that, that's fine. Not really a high crime area in Boston.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Cause it's very well traveled. There's always people around. So.
And pretty well lit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very well lit.
Yeah. No, it's right there. So. Okay. Anyway. So 78 tombs, of which 36 have markers. This includes a large vault built as a charnel house. Now, Beth, do you know what a charnel house is?
Actually, I do, because I had to look up that term as well. But go ahead.
So this kind of explains where we get 1,000 bodies. And that is because a charnel house is a tomb where bodies were just piled on. So they would just have stacks and stacks and stacks of bones in there. And it was later converted into a tomb for children's remains in 1833. So there's some sort of notable people buried here. I call it like the one-off burial site. Like it's people, they themselves weren't super famous, but they're like related to famous incidents. So we have here William Dawes, who did part of the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, but it's not called the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere and William Dawes. So, you know, he's kind of like a one-off, you know? And then we have John Winthrop, who was the first governor of Massachusetts. We have this woman, Mary Chilton, and she was the first English woman to step ashore in New England. So she like took like the first step onto land off of the Mayflower. And then there's William Emerson, who was Ralph Waldo Emerson's father.
Okay.
So, you know, it's all these like, you know, it's neat, but
They're like B-list celebrities.
Right, exactly. Yeah. One of the most influential gravestones is that of Elizabeth Payne. Do you know about this gravestone, Beth?
I do not.
I thought you might, but that's okay. So this gravestone is significant, not for its aesthetic or design, but for the role in inspiring Nathaniel Hawthorne's novel, The Scarlet Letter.
Ooh.
I know, right? The headstone reads, "Here lies the body of Elizabeth Payne, wife to Samuel Payne." And that short phrase is what inspired Hawthorne to dream up his main character, Hester Prynne, for the 17th century woman living in a Puritan Boston who, after being accused of adultery, is publicly humiliated and forced to wear the scarlet letter A. So I don't know why that line on that tombstone just really spoke to him.
You know, sometimes you just get a phrase stuck in your head, you get a little earworm, and suddenly you got to make up a whole story around it just to get rid of the earworm.
Yeah.
And so millions of high school students have been tortured with
the Scarlet Letter.
Yeah, the Scarlet Letter. Thank you. Hawthorne's earworm.
So at that time, as we've talked about on the show before, it wasn't super uncommon for people to be buried alive. So, you know, I mean, it wasn't like today. They couldn't see your heart on a big machine. They weren't like knowing if you were in a coma or if you had like, I don't know, something that would make you just seem dead. Hypothermia and you pass out and then next thing you know, you're in a box on the ground. And I believe that's like the number one fear amongst Americans is being buried alive.
Public speaking.
Well, that's another one, but this is one of them too.
Public speaking is the number one fear.
Okay, well, being buried alive is one of the number
Number two is death. So if you have to be at a funeral, people would be less afraid to be in the coffin than having to give the eulogy.
Yeah.
Huh. It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
And then you have people like Amelia and I that we do public speaking all the time.
We do, but I'm not going to lie, don't love giving eulogies. Okay, so... Don't love it.
That's not the kind of public speaking we do.
Okay, so it was pretty common. You could get buried alive, but that is not what we're talking about right now. What we are talking about right now is a very famous legend from this cemetery, and that is that there was a man who had this, you know, nice property. He had a little bit of money, but most of the money was wrapped up in the property. He has a nice place, okay? So his family members decided to just bury him alive and get rid of him. And that's what they did. I don't know how. I couldn't find how. Again, it's like one of those legends. I don't know if they knocked him over the head with a shovel and just like put him in a box and threw him in the ground.
Well, I mean, if you're going to go that far, why not just bludgeon him to death? And then you've buried a dead body instead of a live body, right?
So I kind of thought about that too. And the only thing I can think of is this is like Puritan America. So maybe they didn't want to, you know, if you were caught bludgeoning someone to death, that's a problem for you. And if everyone thinks this guy really is dead, then maybe not so much of a problem unless an elderly woman caught onto your scheme and led a mob into the cemetery to dig you back up.
Oh my God. That's awesome.
Which is what happened. Unfortunately, upon doing that, the guy did die from suffocation in the coffin. But they found fingernail markings all over it, which is so sad.
That's so sad.
I know, it's upsetting. So he spent his last moments trying to claw his way out, but didn't work. So at night now, people will often hear muffled screams coming from beneath the earth. And the spookiest part about that is they hear more than one muffled scream, leading people to believe that this happened more than once, where someone was buried alive.
Oh, well, I mean,
which again was not that uncommon at that time.
Yeah, it's in that particular really small burial ground, though.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, this was a common practice. How to get rid of a neighbor that you don't like? Bury them alive. Please do not bury your unpleasant neighbors.
No.
No. Ghost hunting in New England officially condemns the idea of burying your neighbors alive or hitting them with shovels.
If they deserve to get hit with a shovel, that's on them, but don't bury them alive because that's on you. Okay, so another story that comes out of here, and this is also a legend. I wasn't sure if I should include this story or not, but I decided to because I feel like not the show theme, but like the Amelia story theme for this season has been pirate stories. And I'm like, should I include this like little pirate story or just keep it
always
to myself? But I figured I should.
Always so include the pirate stories.
This is a little pirate story. It's not a big one. It's not a grand one. It's a little one. And so that's the story of Captain Kidd, Kidd with two Ds, who is supposedly working for the governor to help search for pirates. But like all good pirate searchers, he became a pirate himself.
It's easy money.
It's easy money. And to circle the big circle of life, the circle of karma, a pirate hunter found him and brought him in. And so there he was. Rumors were flying around Boston about all of his stolen treasures. He was captured. He was held in the year 1700 for a while in the Boston jail. And then he was sent to England, where he was tried without representation, convicted, and hanged in 1701. And so it says there, it says that he was then returned to Boston and buried at the King's Chapel Burying Ground. So many have said they see his ghost and they've heard his voice while visiting the graveyard. And it is said that if you go into the cemetery at night, preferably when the moon is behind the clouds, and you tap softly on one of the headstones three times and whisper, "Captain Kidd, Captain Kidd, for what were you hanged?" Captain Kidd will answer, "Nothing."
So, as great as that's a spooky story, what I really want to know is, how do people know it's his voice? It's not like they heard him. He's been dead for hundreds of years.
Well, and that brings me to the reason why I don't really wasn't sure if I should include this.
Okay.
And that is that there's a lot of speculation that he was ever brought back to Boston or buried there. And I couldn't find a lot on it. I did find a lot about him being hanged in England.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, the whole thing, it just didn't make a lot of sense. And even some like papers were like, there's no evidence he ever came back here, but it's a good story.
It is a great story.
Yeah.
You know, Beetlejuice, so, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
There you go. So,
or wait, what's the one that we would be more interested in? Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary.
Yes.
And then suddenly you got a Bloody Mary.
There you go. Okay. So in the western corner of the cemetery, there's the headless spirit of what is presumed to be a slave of the time. And she still roams the grounds. And it's really noticeable when you see her roaming the grounds because she doesn't have a head.
Okay.
And that'll make you stand out.
Yeah.
And it's really gruesome why she doesn't have a head. So this is like a, I don't know. You're listening to a ghost podcast. You know what's coming up. Okay. So after she died, the carpenter built a coffin for her. Yeah. But he didn't quite calculate the measurements just right. And instead of just making a new coffin, he cut off her head and put it between her legs so she would all fit in there. So luckily...
Okay, wait a second. Mm-hmm. I can, right off the top of my head, think of 10 better ways to have gotten her corpse into that coffin mm-hmm, other than mm-hmm, cutting mm-hmm. her head off.
Like bend her knees.
I'm sorry, did I just say off the top of my head?
Yeah. But bum.
No pun intended.
So... You know, he made the body fit, but obviously quite upsetting to the spirit of the woman. I'm sure that considering that this cemetery was only burying people between 1630 and 1660, she had a lot of other things that were not pleasant that had happened to her already up to that point. But now she's been haunting the graveyard ever since. Wow. And you can see her most often in the west corner of the cemetery.
All right. I'll bring my compass.
So in 1810, many of the headstones in the burial ground were moved around. And a few decades later, the markers in the center of the yard were also moved. And so that was like really disrespectful because they didn't move the people. They just moved their headstones. So before it was kind of like everyone was placed all around, like there were no rows or anything.
So it was like musical gravestones.
I guess. But I mean, more what it was is they just didn't move the people and they just made lines with the gravestones to make it look nice. And so people like, so landscapers had an easier time caring for the grounds. So it says that by doing that, they confused all the spirits. And so spirits are supposed to be like walking around looking for their headstone and like confused about like when they come up out of the ground, like confused about where to go back in. So that's one of the stories. And other spooky things that happen here are orbs of light and photograph, flashes of lights, shadowy figures, and disappearances of videos on people's cameras.
Ooh.
And that's my story.
So I'm inclined to think that spirits don't, like, they're not, how should I put this?
I think I know what you're trying to say, and I agree.
That they don't know how to read and they don't really care where their headstone is?
They don't, like, pop out of their coffin and go haunt a place and then, like, zoom back over to the coffin.
Right. But, I mean,
that's, like, very cartoony.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be judgmental. So if you're a spirit out there who requires their headstone be in the correct place so that you can find your way back into the ground, could you please write into the show and let us
know? Write into the show. Let us know.
Yeah.
Tell us what it's all about.
We would love to hear from you.
Yeah.
Cool. It's a good story.
Thanks.
Yeah. I'm surprised that there are so many bodies and headstones and footstones in that little tiny area.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's the one right, you walk down past the granary and then the Omni Parker house is on your right. And if you go just past the Omni Parker house, like across that street, then it's just on your right after that. Yeah.
It's by this bar. It's tiny. All the time. Yeah.
Teeny tiny. But yes, very, very old. And it's got some neat gravestones in there. And it doesn't, unlike the granary burial ground, which has a really big fence. What did you think I was going to say?
That is our next story.
Oh, okay. Are you going to talk about the fence?
No.
Okay.
A little, but not really.
All right. So I was just going to say the granary burial ground it's like raised up a little over the sidewalk and it has this really tall fence. Mm-hmm. But the King's Chapel burial ground doesn't have any like fence. Like you can really like, as far as I remember, there's just a little, I don't know, almost like paver stones along the front of it. You can just step right over and into that graveyard.
Mm.
Burial ground, cemetery. What is the proper term here?
Burial ground.
Burial ground? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. So it's interesting that your two stories are right across the street from each other because my two stories are also right across the street from each other.
Holy smokes.
Do you want to do your other story and then I can do my two together? Or
I don't care, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, do your other story. Yeah.
All right. Submitted for the approval of the Midnight Society. My next story takes place across the street. So in 1960,
we just, you know, like started building a burial site right in the middle of downtown Boston.
In 1660, town officials set aside for burial parts of what was then Boston Common to help alleviate overcrowding in the nearby King Chapel's burying ground. The granary burying ground took its name in 1737 when a granary, a small building used to store grain, was moved to the site presently occupied by Park Street Church. All interments ceased at the granary in 1880. Have you ever been to a service at Park Street Church?
I have not, but you have told me a couple of times how great they are.
They're really good. If you're a young person and like need like a nice, like modern, like feel good kind of church in Boston, I highly recommend them. They're really, really nice people there. The granary burying grounds contains approximately 2,345 gravestones and tombs, which you know I love because that's 2, 3, 4, 5. And I like it when numbers align like that. Although it is estimated that 5,000 people are buried at the site. Ooh. It is said that when the grounds first opened, the bodies were buried in graves so shallow, they would sometimes resurface in the heavy rains and float on down the street.
They would float down the street? I'm sorry.
Float on.
I shouldn't laugh at that, but...
Float on.
That had to be some pretty heavy rain because you're way up above sea level there. So it's not like the ocean's washing in. Like, this is just like rainwater.
Yeah.
Nuts.
Yeah. Nor'easter kid. The gravestone's original haphazard configuration was rearranged to straighter rows over the years to accommodate both 19th century aesthetics and the modern lawnmower, very similar to the other graveyard. Oh, I wrote that down. Pretty much exactly like what happened at King's Chapel. Wow, look at me. All right. So during the mid-19th century, many landscaping projects were undertaken at the granary, including the installation of pedestrian walkways and the planting of nice shady trees, of shrubbery, that fence you were talking about. All that went up there. So despite them fencing the cemetery off and despite like these changes, we still have 5,000 people buried there and only 2,345 markers. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So on January 31st, 2009, a crypt was discovered.
According like 2009, to, like 12 years ago.
That's right. Yes.
Okay.
According to the Boston Globe, a woman on a self-guided tour of the cemetery in downtown Boston took a very fateful step and the ground gave way and she fell hip deep into a hidden granite stairwell that was leading to an underground crypt.
I am screaming in my head right now because I am like freaking out if I had fallen into a hidden like burial site underneath mm-hmm. the cemetery. Like, mm-hmm. No. It's kind of cool though.
It's kind of cool though. It's like the start of a movie. I like it. So the woman wasn't injured and she only fell into the entrance of the tomb.
We're talking like borderline like ancient Egyptian, like hidden under the ground. Mm-hmm. Lost for hundreds mm-hmm. of thousands of years sort of stuff here, like crazy.
That is right, because her foot fell into an opening that was 3 feet deep and 18 inches across, which was the stairwell that led into the basement bulkhead. And the 8 foot by 12 foot brick crypt remains intact and is structurally sound, according to Kelly Thomas of the Historic Burying Grounds Initiative, who was quoted in the Globe saying that. The stairs leading to it had been covered by a slate slab that appears to have been broken some time ago, allowing the dirt to pile up under the steps. And it is believed that this was the resting place of this guy named Jonathan Armitage. No one knows which Jonathan Armitage it is, though. So there was a Jonathan Armitage.
I know, that's such a common name, right?
Right. So one was elected a selectman in Boston in 1732 and 1733. And then there was Captain Jonathan Armitage, and he served in the Committee of Fortification in 1733. So there's that.
So just the two of them?
Yeah.
Maybe they're both buried in there.
I don't know. I don't think they were related.
I don't think it matters. They had the same name. They were named twins.
So if King's Chapel was the one-off famous man's burial site, the granary was... like the actual famous man's burial site,
mm-hmm.
right? So this is where like your A-list Boston people at that time were buried. So you'll find like the governors, the mayors, clergymen. You'll also find three signers of the Declaration of Independence, Samuel Adams, John Hancock, and Robert Payne. Peter Faneuil, who Faneuil Hall is named after, he's buried down there. And Paul Revere, who is known for the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere. And James Otis, revolutionary orator and lawyer, and five victims of the Boston Massacre. Near the center of the ground is a 25-foot tall obelisk, which commemorates the tomb of Benjamin Franklin's parents.
And?
That's what I got.
Mother Goose is buried in there.
And Mother Goose.
Mother Goose of the nursery rhymes that you heard as children is also buried in the granary burial ground. Also, are you going to talk about... John Hancock's headstone?
No, but I am about to talk about some headstones.
Okay.
And that is that Puritan churches did not believe in religious icons or imagery. So people of Boston used tombstones as kind of an outlet for artistic expression of their beliefs about the afterlife. So one of the most popular motifs was the soul effigy or a skull or death heads. So that's when they have like the skull with wings on each side to represent the soul flying to heaven after death. Elaborate scroll work, poetic epitaphs, and depictions of the Grim Reaper and Father Time also adorned many headstones. And this is also true about King's Chapel across the street. They're very known for these really elaborate headstones. Did you want to add something about John Hancock?
Like John Hancock's gigantic phallic headstone?
It's phallic and his name is Hancock?
Yes.
Hilarious.
Maybe it's Sam Adams that has the big phallic headstone.
I like to think it's John Hancock. So one of the granary's ghosts is the famous lawyer of James Otis Jr. So he lived during the time of the Revolution and was said to have had an argument with a British tax collector at a local pub. When the tax collector hit Otis over the head with a bottle, the lawyer became mentally incapacitated and was so dismayed over his condition that he wrote a letter expressing his wish that God take him away to eternity with a flash of lightning. And as God does, he answered. And soon after, Otis was killed, being struck by lightning in a thunderstorm.
Ask and ye shall receive.
Incredible. So now people often see him hanging around at the cemetery, and he's dressed as a colonial figure. And the thing that I thought was really cool about his ghost is that people see him during the day. So you can see him at night, and a lot of people see him during the day. And he's very sad. He keeps to himself. He's not one of those ghosts who's going to like tap you on the shoulder and ask you for directions. He's just there, and he's upset, and then he disappears. And that's my story of the Granary Cemetery.
Cool story.
Hey, thanks.
I love the granary. I've even brought Bobby in there.
Ooh.
Yeah. When he was like super little and would go on trips with me, we would take the train, the commuter train, right into Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd walk around in there. Yeah.
That's great.
Good times.
Yeah.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to take you all the way across town up toward the other end of the Freedom Trail into the North End. So, we may have mentioned this before, but I have lived my whole life in Boston, or at least within 15 miles of Boston anyway. And there are a few things that I've never done. I've never been on a duck tour. I've never ridden a swan boat.
Oh, they're fun. You should go on one. And they're cheap.
I've never parked a car at Harvard Yard. I don't think you can even park there, can you?
Not technically.
Okay. I've never even set foot on the grounds of either Harvard or MIT. I mean, I've driven through, but I've never like gotten out or done anything there. I've never been in the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum.
You got to go. It's fabulous.
And I've never taken an actual tour of the Freedom Trail. I mean, I've followed the red brick path that you can do all 2.5 miles on my own. And I've seen all the sites, but I've never gone to the tour company and paid money to follow someone around and have them tell me the history. It's just a little too touristy for me, but anyway, this week, I have two stories from the North End, which is the other end of the Freedom Trail. And the first location you've probably heard of, or at least about, and the second one I would wager most of our listeners have never heard of, unless they've taken the tour, of course. So let's get started. Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the underground crypts at the Old North Church.
Cool.
Okay, I butchered Longfellow. You may have heard a slightly more eloquent version of this poem along your early educational journey. Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere on the 18th of April in 75. Hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year. That's a nice limerick, isn't it?
Yes.
Did you know it's a limerick?
No.
I mean, it doesn't start off with there once was a man from Nantucket, but it's the right rhyme scheme. He said to his friend, if the British march by land or sea from the town tonight, hang a lantern aloft in the belfry arch of the North Church Tower as a signal light, one if by land and two if by sea, and I on the opposite shore will be, ready to ride and spread the alarm through every Middlesex village and farm, for the county folk to be up and to arm. And then it goes on a while after that, but that old North Church from the poem that Amelia has referenced a couple of times already. Right?
It's wicked famous.
Paul Revere and William Dawes. And if you think Paul Revere was the only guy to do that ride, you should definitely look a little bit more into it because he was not. And it's only because of Longfellow's poem that everybody thinks that it was Paul Revere.
And you can see that other guy over at King's Chapel Burial Ground.
William Dawes. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So the Old North Church was built in 1723. The official name is Christ Church in the City of Boston. It was built and attended by Anglicans who are members of the Church of England, and it was right smack in the middle of a large population of Congregationalists. The Congregationalists were not necessarily welcoming, but tolerant of their new Anglican neighbors, but not really tolerant enough to give them or even sell them any land nearby for a cemetery. So the Old North Church used the small parcel of land they already had and built crypts in the basement. 37 brick-lined vaults were built, and from 1732 to 1860, there were an astonishing 1,100 people buried in the crypt. Naturally, it started as just the wealthy people in the congregation being honored with a burial in the church. Then it became a fundraising endeavor, and many more people were allowed burial. As years went on, I'm sure you can imagine what started happening to the old crypts. The oldest ones were opened, and skulls and collarbones were removed from the vaults, and the remains still in the vault were then swept into a charnel pit, which Amelia talked about earlier. I have a couple more details about it. It's actually a medieval invention. And in my research, it was a large open grave where spare bones that were discovered while digging graves were deposited into. So it was, instead of being necessarily like just a big open tomb or an big open grave, it was like a hole that all the trash bones got thrown into. All right. So pretty awesome, right? After the vault was swept out, the skulls and collarbones would be returned to the vault. Was reverence for the dead or just superstition, who knows, and more bodies would be added to the newly discovered space. Would you like to know who is buried in the Old North crypts?
Yes.
All right. Literally no one you've ever heard of. These are like your D-list burials. This was a place for your average everyday Bostonian to be buried. All right. The first commander of the USS Constitution, Samuel Nichols, is interred here. Anne Ruggles is buried in tomb 1742. So it's weird that some of the tombs have numbers to them, and they all seem to indicate the year that that tomb was there and closed up. So, Anne Ruggles. And I tried to find out, is she in any way related to, like, the people that Ruggles Station got named after or Ruggles Street, but I couldn't find any sort of connection. Shubael Bell and Robert Fennelly are in tomb 1808. I have no idea who they are. The church's first pastor, Timothy Cutler, was actually buried somewhere else when he died. He was then dug up to be reburied here with a wealthy family who wanted to have the distinction of being buried with the first pastor. And that to me is like super creepy.
And just disrespectful. Like,
yeah. There is a stranger's tomb. And it contains the bodies of poor people of Boston. So I guess they were running out of space all over the place. And so as an act of charity, the Old North Church allowed some of them to be buried in one of their tombs. There's also an entire tomb filled with smallpox victims. So lots of nameless people ended up in the Old North Church. In the 1850s, the city of Boston banned the practice of burying bodies under buildings. You may have remembered I said that there were 1,100 people buried between 1732 and 1860. The Old North Church wasn't going to be told when they had to stop burying their dead. But in 1860, they did bury the final soul in there and seal up the tomb. And next, we fast forward to 2009. A funerary archaeologist, and I got to tell you, I would love to know how someone's career path brings them to being a funerary archaeologist. Her name was Jane Linden Rousseau, and she was researching the church and had the crypts opened for the first time in 149 years. After she was done with her research on behalf of Harvard's Peabody Museum, she worked to have the crypts funded to remain open for tours to the public. What a nice lady. I want to do a quick recap. So we got an old church, didn't really get along great with their neighbors. The members were primarily British loyalists, but the church was used for a famous patriot uprising. There's a crypt under the church where the bodies of dead have been disturbed many, many times. And so do we think this is prime breeding ground for a ghost or two? Yes, definitely. All right. Some think this is the haunting place of Paul Revere, our local silversmith slash war hero. But Paul Revere didn't live here. He didn't die here. He didn't even attend church here. There's no concrete evidence connecting Paul Revere to the church other than his supposed instructions about lanterns, which are actually believed to be William Dawes's idea, in the steeple, and then looking back across the harbor at them. So I'm inclined to think that Paul Revere has much better places to hang out in his ghostly body. Besides, we already know that the crypt is filled with the unimportant people of Boston's history, so wouldn't it make much more sense to have nameless, anonymous souls haunting the church above?
Yes.
Tours are a regular occurrence at the Old North Church, as you can imagine, being on the Freedom Trail and all, and the tour guides are responsible for shutting down the church at the end of the night, so you know they have all the best stories. Part of the routine at closing is picking up all the Bibles, hymnals, and other books around the church and carefully putting them all on a table for overnight storage. This is done every night before they turn out the lights and lock the doors. But on regular occasions, when the tour operators arrive back in the morning, the Bibles and hymnals are knocked down from the table and even moved around the church to different locations, into the pews, near the doors, on the altar. Right. Tour guides report extreme cold spots at night as the tourist activity winds down. Now, as someone from Boston, I know we can get some great sea breezes as the sun sets each night, and sometimes it's an actual cold wind that will hit you, even in the middle of summer. And it's very refreshing when that happens, by the way. So I almost feel like I can explain away some of those cold spots, but not some of the other spooky happenings. All right. Tour guides have many stories of doors that open or close themselves when no one's near them, and doors that lock and unlock themselves. I'm inclined to think that an old church built of wood in an environment that sees such extreme temperature swings as New England might have doors that don't close all the way. You know those doors that always swing open because they weren't hung right? That's sort of what I'm thinking. Wonky hinges and those sea breezes might be the culprits behind the swinging doors. All right, books aren't the only items that are known to move themselves in the church. Tour guides aren't the only people having experiences. Visitors report putting down bags on a pew while they sit, and when they get up to go, the bag has moved far out of their reach. Visitors also report hearing voices, both loud voices and soft whisperings. And this is my favorite. They see the elves out of the corner of their eyes. You know when you see something that like darts out of your vision before you can focus on it? And I call them the elves. Most of these instances are happening on the tours at the end of the day when the traffic is winding down and the whole church becomes quiet and meditative. Right. So people are still in there for tours as the day gets older. And that's, I guess, the best time to go and see some spooky activity. The Old North Church is a great photo opportunity if you come to Boston. It has a majestic 191-foot steeple and an amazing pipe organ. They still hold weekly services, and you're welcome and invited to attend. Right now, they're live streaming the services to maintain social distances, but when they resume in person, they will be offering two services on Sunday mornings. The church is currently closed to the public for tours, but if you want to schedule a private tour, it can be arranged for groups of up to 8 people, starting at... How much do you think it is for a private tour for 8 people through the church?
$245.
Keep going.
Really?
Keep going.
$445.
Keep going.
$1,600.
$500.
Incredible.
And that's just where it starts. So I guess if you want to get any fancier, the price just goes up. If you want to wait till they reopen and take the crypt tour, it was $5 a person before COVID. You can find the Old North Church at 193 Salem Street in Boston, 02113. And I mention that because zip codes are important in Boston. There are many repeat street names. And so if you put in just the street name, you might be brought to completely the wrong part of town.
Good story.
Yeah, thanks.
You should go on a tour when they reopen.
Oh, definitely. Especially for $5.
Yeah, I don't know why we haven't. It seems like something we would do.
I would think at this point, like we should probably plan when they reopen most of the stuff to go and like walk the Freedom Trail and we'll check out all the stuff. But the thing is, you got to go kind of like at night, and you know me, I like to go to bed.
Yeah. I don't know. I hate to sound like a loser, but I'm not like super interested in doing like the Freedom Trail tour, but I'd go look at like.
Right. To go along and like look at the graveyards along the Freedom Trail.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I understand. I wouldn't drag you through the History of Boston tour, unless, of course, I can find some haunted story at each of those History of Boston places.
Mm.
All right. So my next story is a few short steps from the Old North Church, and that's where you're going to find Copse Hill Burying Ground.
Ooh.
Now, Amelia told us about the oldest cemetery in the city of Boston, the King's Chapel Burying Ground. And now I'm going to tell you about the second oldest cemetery in the city of Boston.
Cool.
So it's been through some name changes over the years. It was originally called Windmill Hill because, you guessed it, there was a windmill built there before the land was bought by the city to be a burial ground. Then when the cemetery was originally built, I was thinking about this as I was writing. Are cemeteries actually built? Is that the right term?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, that's weird because there's no building that goes on. It's more like clearing.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, weird. Okay. In 1659, it was simply called the North Burying Ground. William Copp, C-O-P-P, it's sometimes pronounced Cope, C-O-P-E, was a shoemaker who emigrated to the colonies in 1635 and bought a small parcel of land on Windmill Hill. When he died, the parcel of land was gifted to the city, and the whole area was renamed Copp's Hill Burying Ground. There's a bit of speculation about whether Copp's Hill is named after William Copp, the shoemaker, or his eldest son, David Copp, who was actually the gifter of the land. Anyway, over the years, there were four separate pieces of land that all came together to become Copp's Hill's burying grounds. From 1659 until the 1850s, there was a lot of action in the Copp's Hill burying grounds. Over 10,000 people have been buried there, including over 1,000 freed or former slaves. During the American Revolution, British troops set up camp atop the hill and used the headstones here for target practice. They shot cannons out into the harbor to dial in the range they would need for the upcoming Battle of Bunker Hill and used their muskets to shoot at headstones. One headstone in particular was Daniel Malcolm, a recognized son of liberty, who was an infamous smuggler of wine into the colonies. To this day, there are still four recognizable bullet holes in the headstone of this early American patriot. The burying grounds were also the source of building material over the years, and no, I'm not kidding. During the early 1900s in Boston, there was a tremendous amount of building happening, and land was at a premium. So the city made the only logical choice. They would simply make more land. Many marshy areas along the waterfront were filled to create new places to build housing and factories, and this landfill was taken from places like Copp's Hill Burying Ground. The hill was much higher in the 1800s than it is today, and due to the removal of so much soil from the cemetery, can you guess what started to happen?
Bodies started coming up.
Yes. Normal rainfall was causing significant acceleration of erosion on the hill. Headstones began to sink into the soft earth, and coffins were slowly exposed as the earth washed away. But that's not even the worst of it. People started using the headstones for a variety of purposes in and around the cemetery. Gravediggers would pull out an adjacent headstone to use as a platform or plank when performing burials in the cemetery. As more housing was built in the area, people would stroll into the cemetery and think nothing of walking off with a headstone to cover a drain or chimney in their home or repair a broken roof tile. Builders stole the headstones to use as foundations for houses. DPW workers, or whatever they were called then, would grab headstones to complete road repairs around the area. And, okay, this one might actually be the worst. One known headstone was stolen and used as a baking plate by a nearby family.
Dang, that's cold.
Right? Can you imagine? Like,
no.
Hey, kids, headstone dinner's ready. Wash up.
How bizarre. That's very weird.
Oh, wait, I actually have one that's worse. As Snow Hill was constructed on the western end of the cemetery, there were more horrors than you can imagine. The western end of the cemetery is where the African Americans were buried, and as was the custom, they had wooden gravestones as markers. Those wooden markers rotted over time and left a wide, unmarked area full of dead bodies. And in typical progress must go on, the graves of those deceased people were unceremoniously dug up and removed from the earth to make room for more of those pesky living people. Some bodies were reburied in other parts of Copp's Hill, and some remains were just left.
People are disgusting.
Yeah, just it's horrible.
That's really upsetting.
Is there any wonder why North End residents, the people who live in the North End of Boston, to this day won't walk on the same side of the street as the cemetery? You get tourists that go by, they're going to happily stroll by in the shadow of that cemetery. But locals cross the street when they come to that section of the street. Scary stuff happens in the cemetery. There are a lot of reports over in the western end of the cemetery of just shadow figures, just kind of roaming around and just being generally spooky.
Okay. Beth, why don't we go?
Well, because it's 9 o'clock on a Monday night.
I mean, yeah, like not right now, but we got to go to these places.
That's what I'm saying.
All four of these cemeteries are so close.
Right.
And there's like six amazing espresso places in between all of them.
Okay, great.
We can go and get all jazzed up.
All right. I just want to I've been to all of these places.
No, I know. I have too, but we haven't like as like, you know, ghost people, we haven't been.
Okay. She's so disappointed. All right. So over at the Old North Church, right, we had like your D-list celebrities. Mm-hmm. And at the King's Chapel, we had your B-list. And then we had some A-list celebrities at the Granary. So I'm going to call these like the B-plus, right? Because we actually do have a couple of recognizable names of people buried there in Copps Hill Burying Grounds.
All right.
All right. Increase and Cotton Mather of those famous witch trials are both buried here. Increase, the fire and brimstone preacher who urged moderation during the trials, regularly appears to torment visitors to the cemetery. He's known to appear at dusk and follow the visitors around, taunting them and yelling at them. His son Cotton, on the other hand, was a zealous persecutor of witches during the trials, and it's believed that the souls of those he condemned to death come to his final resting place, and he cries and wails with sorrow for what he's done. People who live close to the hill claim to often hear a man's sad cries during the night. Robert Newman's grave is also here. You may remember him from earlier, if I had actually mentioned his name, but I didn't. Robert Newman has a famous place in history as the patriot who climbed to the top of the Old North Church and hung the two lanterns to indicate the British crossing by sea.
Cool.
Yeah. Phyllis Wheatley, she was a famous African-American poet. It's still National Women's Month, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm also going to add that Phyllis Wheatley was the first African-American woman and the second woman ever to have a book of poetry published in the colonies. Cool. Her most famous poem is On Being Brought from Africa to America. And she was so popular and widely read that George Washington actually issued her an invitation to come visit him at his home after he read her poetry.
Wow.
Which I thought was pretty awesome, right? All right. Prince Hall is the founder of the Black Freemasonry. He's also buried there. And I have to admit, I don't really know anything about Freemasons other than they have that neat protractor thing as their logo. And Tim Regan's a Freemason. But I really don't know anything about them. Prince Hall was the guy who established these independent groups of Freemasons when African Americans were denied admission to established Freemason groups. Black Freemasonry is now a recognized part of the Freemasons Association, thanks to the hard work of Prince Hall. All right, Edmund Hart, the man responsible for building the USS Constitution, the country's oldest warship still in service, is buried at Copps Hill. The U.S. Constitution is also a stop along the Freedom Trail, and if you're lucky enough to be there in October when they do the turnaround cruise, you can actually see the ship sail under its own power from Charlestown over to Castle Island in South Boston. It fires a 21-gun salute and then returns to the pier in Charlestown to spend a year face the other direction. It's something about the ship has to turn around once a year so that it weathers evenly on both sides. And so as I was writing this, I was wondering if the souls of Edmund Hart and Samuel Nicholson meet up and talk sailing or meet to watch the annual turnaround cruise or any of that. I thought that would just be like such a cute idea if the first captain and the builder of the ship were connected spirits somehow.
Yeah.
So one more noteworthy name. George Worthy Lake and his wife and daughter are buried here. He was the first keeper of Boston Light. You can hear his whole story in our season 3, episode number 12, Libraries and Lighthouses.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So Definitely a little self-promotion there. So if you want to hear his whole story and why it might be interesting that he's buried there, go back and listen to that episode.
That was a good one.
It was. Anything to do with libraries, lighthouses, the ocean. You got books and the sea. I'm all over it.
The big L's.
All right. With all the names of people in the cemetery and the desecrated graves of so many unknown names, and since we know the local residents are reluctant to walk next to the cemetery, would it be any surprise that we have some paranormal activities here?
No.
A little more enthusiastic, please.
I know. You write these scripts and you like put lines in for me and that I don't know.
All you have to do is answer it. I'm just giving you a chance to interact. In addition to the Mathers yelling and crying, people have also reported seeing flashes of light and glowing orbs. The lights are sometimes single flashes. Sometimes they're like a light show. And the orbs appear in singles sometimes, more often in small groups. And there's the occasional blizzard of orbs to be seen. Without a doubt, the most common report is about there being an eerie feeling in and around the cemetery. But there's also the occasional full-bodied apparition spotted in the cemetery, and not just in Crees Mather. People have also seen women walking about in flowing period dress, and little girls, both alone and in small groups, have been spotted running around playing among the graves, which I think is just like a cute image. I think of the twins, you know, like that's what I'm thinking of, like them darting in and out and just running around. Yeah. My nieces. One more tale of horror from the Copse Hill burying grounds. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Nicholas Della Russo wrote a great article in North End Waterfront called Life on the Corner, a Copse Hill Mystery, about an experience he had as a teenager on Copse Hill. During his teenage years, he and friends hung around in the cemetery on a regular basis. As teenagers do, they swap stories of rumors and urban legends they picked up along the way. One of the most prolific stories had to do with the children's tomb. Officially, the children's tomb was a resting place for infants who had passed before being baptized, and therefore their souls were damned. But the rumors swirled that the giant stone structure with the iron door secured with an ancient padlock was actually the entrance to a series of tunnels. And these tunnels had been used by pirates, by bootleggers, by underground railroaders. And so naturally, the teens talked themselves into breaking in and exploring the tomb and tunnels. Hey, maybe there's a little pirate loot left over, right? So they broke the lock and pried open the door, only to be hit by a dank and unpleasant odor coming from the tomb. Is it hard to believe that no one was actually enthusiastic about going down into the tomb at that point?
No.
So they elected the kid in the group who always got elected for the undesirable tasks. He went down into the tomb with only a few matches and a candle, and everyone else waited up at the door. After a few minutes, the chosen one returned, all a flutter and refusing to go back down there. He reported the tomb was full of bones, but not regular people bones. He described them as rat bones or cat bones, very small. And so it turns out it is a tomb, and it is full of the bodies of infants who passed away.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. There was no report of tunnels, but it was dark, and the chosen one was scared. So the crew of teenagers decided to go back another night with flashlights and do a thorough look around. Except when they came back, the lock and door had been replaced by an observant caretaker to protect the eternal rest of those infants. So you want to visit?
Yeah.
You can find the Copse Hill Burying Grounds on Hull Street in Boston, 02113, just up the hill from the Old North Church. Admission is free, but the cemetery closes at 4 p.m. each day. And I was trying to find some information about being buried there, and it appears that the most recent burials were in the 1800s, so if you were hoping to spend eternity with Cotton Mather and George Worthy Lake and Phyllis Wheatley, you're out of luck. But by all means, stop by for a visit. There are fantastic views of the harbor and all the wonderful smells of the North End's many, many amazing restaurants waft past this hill.
Nice. Good story, Beth.
Hey, thanks.
Welcome.
So look at that. We had four awesome stories about burial grounds in Boston.
Yes.
Did you ever think we would get four seasons worth of material about haunted stuff in New England?
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. We haven't even hit a lot of it.
Oh yeah, I feel, and every
like,
time
not even like the tip of the iceberg. We're on like the tip of the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like every time we come up with an idea about let's do this, it generates like five or six new ideas of other things that we can talk about and investigate. So
yeah, I just can't wait till we can like investigate again. That's what I want to get out there. Get on out there.
Right. So any mail?
Well, Beth Helen, we have no mail, but we have a whole bunch of 5-star reviews.
Woohoo!
Yeah, baby. Okay, so let's get started. Thank you, everyone, for leaving us 5-star reviews. So first, we're going to go on to Apple iTunes Store. We received a review on Friday from Thunder A... I don't know how to say this. Thunder...
Is it my cat?
What?
Is it Thunder A Cat?
No.
Oh.
It's Thunder OAW123. So is it Thunder OAW123 or is it Thunder AO123?
I'm going to go with AO.
Everybody say AO, AO. Boom, boom, boom. Okay. So he left us, or she left us, a 5-star review. And what is the title? The Best Ghost Podcast.
Yes.
That's awesome.
It's us, right?
Heck yeah. That's the best title for a review of a ghost podcast. So there you go. And he writes, or she writes, I love this podcast. Keep doing what you're doing. Well, thank you so much, Thunder AO123.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much.
Next, we go to Podbean, to the Ghost Hunting in New England podcast on Podbean.
Well, how do you say that again?
Podbean.
Amelia's having technical difficulties.
Womp womp.
Please stand by.
Please stand by. This comes 4 months ago. Because apparently I haven't checked in a minute. 4 months ago, someone named Waza left us a comment that says, brilliant podcast and so easy to sit back and listen to. That was on our episode of the Fairbanks house that they left that comment. So thank you so much, Waza.
Yeah,
because all the comments for every episode just like fall down to the bottom there. But I like to think those are like the reviews. Next, we move on to Audible, which we are finally on. And I love Audible and I listen to Audible all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that Ghost Hunting in New England is on Audible makes me very, very happy. So, yeah, you know, if you're out there, if you're one of those people who's like, oh, I don't have an iPhone, I can't leave it on the iPhone store, you can leave it on Audible. And it's for free on Audible.
Yeah.
So our first review comes from Jeremiah. It really is my favorite spooky podcast. Well, thank you so much, Jeremiah. What a great title for that, too. We got two people leaving these awesome titles. I love it. He ranked us 5-star overall, 5-star performance, 5-star story. So that's 15 stars. That's pretty good.
Thanks for the 15 stars, Jeremiah.
Thank you so much. I've been listening for almost a year now. I originally found this podcast when I was moving long distance and needed a good podcast for those long days on the road. Almost a year later, and I'm a regular listener. I loved the most recent episode, Vampires of Eastern Europe. And Amelia, I wish you luck on your trip to Romania. Please tell us about your spooky experiences you have. This is an amazing podcast, and I highly recommend it. Well, thank you so much, Jeremiah. That is very sweet. Unfortunately, due to travel bans, I am not going to Romania for my honeymoon. But I was promised we could revisit the idea at the end of the summer. Instead, I'm staying inside a volcano. Thank you for your review. That is very, very nice.
Thank you, Jeremiah. She's going to Hawaii. She's going to stay in a volcano in Hawaii.
I am. I'm very excited.
Because, I mean, seriously, like, when else are we ever going to get flights from Boston to Hawaii for, like, $600?
Never.
Unbelievable. Never. Yeah.
And Paul wanted to do something, like, really, like, tropical. Don't mind me saying this, but boring, if you will. A little, like, cliche kind of spot. That's what he wanted. And I wanted something, like, very adventurous. So it's the perfect mix because we're going to, like, Hawaii, which is very tropical, very nice, a lot of relaxation. But we're staying literally 0.2 miles from the inside of a volcano. And I've already talked to someone who used to work for me. She lives in Honolulu. I was telling her about it. And she's like, oh, yeah, there are fire gods that are on that volcano. If you take a rock, a fire god will curse you.
Don't take any rocks.
I'm not going to take any rocks. Okay.
And make sure you check your suitcase and your shoes that nothing got stuck.
Nothing. No rocks. And I told Paul right away too. Okay. So our next review comes from William F.
Oh.
Our good friend, William F.
Hey, Will Fox. I was going to say.
Hey, Will Fox. So, and it says, Amelia and Beth are one of a kind. Five-star overall performance, five-star story, 15 stars. Heck yeah, Will Fox, thank you. We think you're 15 stars as well. This is, without a doubt, the best podcast about ghosts and the paranormal by two cousins in the New England area that I've listened to in my recent memory. 10/10 would recommend. Thank you so much, Will. That's very nice. I also like to think that we are the best podcast about ghosts and paranormal done by two cousins in the New England area.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. We're hoping to eventually be the best podcast done by two cousins in, the Eastern United States.
In the Eastern United States, all over the world. And that brings me to the next thing I wanted to point out. I wanted to say hi to some of our new listeners. So we had kind of a lull for a while on our global listenership. We were getting new listeners and it was cool, but we weren't getting more countries. And countries is what I'm really here for. I like seeing new countries pop up.
And Amelia's absolutely crazy about looking at all the demographics and all the data about what's going on. So if you're one of those people that is traveling for some reason, try to download the pod in a country that maybe you think we haven't gotten any downloads in.
Our most recent ones from the last 2 weeks, we have been played in Taiwan. So hello to our listeners in Taiwan.
Hey, I hear they don't have any COVID in Taiwan.
God bless them. That's great. Yeah. That's really great. Greenland.
They have COVID in Greenland.
Well, I was very happy. They also have ghost hunting in New England and Greenland. And I was very happy because Greenland, it takes up a large part of the map I look at. So it's a big part of the map is now glowing. Ooh. So thank you so much, Greenland.
Because it's one of the stretched out maps. If you look at it on a globe, Greenland is actually not even bigger than Brazil.
But so tune into Beth's next podcast, Raining on Parades.
On the big stretched out map, Greenland.
Okay, anyway. Hello next to our listeners in Botswana. Hey, listeners in Botswana. That's a really cool one. So thank you guys so much, everyone who's listened, especially from Taiwan, Greenland, and Botswana. Welcome to the party. We are so happy to have you here. And yeah. We also have listeners in Nigeria. They were the 44th country to tune in, but that's not
amazing.
And they actually listen pretty regularly. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah. Okay. So Beth, what else do we got?
I don't have anything. You got all the reviews. Did we get any drive-by ghostings?
No, we have a guest next week, everybody.
Yeah.
A real ghost hunter.
Yeah, so we can live vicariously through their ghost hunt experiences.
I know. I hope they've been going out in the last couple of months. We need to.
Yeah, we'll find out. I have nothing left to say.
You have nothing left to say?
I just totally ran out of ideas.
I have something else to say.
Oh, I'm so surprised.
Well, what I have to say is that this weekend, my mother-in-law came up, and she's very nice, and Beth got to meet her, and we went up to Salem and we had some psychic readings and one of the readers listens to our show. Hi, Angel. But we also got to go to Tim Regan's store, which was very, very nice. It's very beautiful. And he says a lot of people listen to us have reached out to him over at Pentagram in Salem. And it was my first time going because I don't really leave the house a lot. And it was really nice. It's a beautiful interior. They did a fabulous build out. They have a lot of natural light coming in from the sky, a lot of skylights, which I love. And they had a statue there of Baba Yaga. And Paul and I were driving around recently, and Beth has already made fun of me for this, but we were binge listening to Ghost Hunting New England podcast because it is, in fact, my favorite spooky podcast. And Paul hasn't really caught up fully. We've only known each other a year. We've done 80 episodes. So we're listening to it, and he was listening with me to our one about vampires of Eastern Europe. And he was like, you didn't mention Baba Yaga. And Baba Yaga is because she's not a vampire, all right? But he was thinking, she kind of sounded like the Striga that we talked about from Albania. And so he said when he was a little boy in Moldova, which at that time was part of Russia, that there was Baba Yaga, who was a witch, lived just outside of where you were. And if you like, it was one of those things, like if you didn't eat your vegetables, whoever you were with would be like, Bobby, you guys gonna come. I see her. I see her over there by the tree looking at you, waiting to come get you for not eating your vegetables.
She's the boogeyman.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. So I thought it was funny that, like, you know, and I've never talked about it on the show before, but he brings her up every once in a while to me. But we saw like a little figurine. So I'm probably gonna go and get it for him for his birthday.
Well, now he can't listen to this episode if you're going to say that.
Huh, he'll forget.
No, he won't.
I've already told him. Maybe I won't.
Okay. It is interesting how every culture in the world has a boogeyman.
Yeah.
It's just whatever they call it might be a little bit different. So.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed.
All these and shared ideas.
Tim was saying how much he loved being on our show. So we'll have him back soon. And actually, I have something else interesting. So... It's related. So I am very nervous about getting the evil eye. I've talked about this before. Lately, I felt very certain I have the evil eye. There's no question in my head, right? Like all this stuff, like I wasn't feeling well and I ended up in the hospital and then I'm fine. But like something happened to my business and then it was awful. And then like all this other stuff happened. Paul and I were going to buy a house. It fell through. Like just a lot of stuff that hasn't been good. And I'm like, someone definitely gave me the evil eye. And I've been really upset about it. And like, I bought all this stuff. And I've been like trying to like cleanse myself and clear myself. I'm at Tim's store. And I find this book on like Italian folkloric remedies and things like that. So I'm going through it. And I see in it how you cure this from you. Okay. The malocchia, how you get rid of it. And you do it, you know, you have a porcelain bowl and you put some drops of water in it and you put it on your head and it depends where it goes. So I'm like, I want Paul to do this to me, right? So I'm like, Polly, I'll do it to you so that way you'll know how to do it to me, right? So I do this. I put it on his head. I put some drops in the bowl.
Paul doesn't have as much hair on his head as you do.
What does that have to do with anything?
Well, I would assume, do you put the bowl upside down on your head?
No, you ding dong. Oh. It has water in it. You stick it on your head like this. Oh. The other person holds it. Hold it.
Oh, okay. No, I thought that you would like invert it and like pour the water down. And you said that where the water goes, that's what matters.
No,
it had to like trickle down your face. Okay.
No. No, you put it on your head. You put oil in on the water and then you see what the oil does within the bowl.
Okay.
So what happened is the oil made a perfect eyeball on Paul's head. It went into a circle, the little dot in the middle of it. I have pictures of it. And it was wild and crazy. And we are like sitting here at this desk. Paul's not superstitious. I'm very superstitious. And even Paul's like, that's an eyeball. So anyway, the book taught me how to do like go through the whole thing and clear it out. And we were talking to Archangel Michael and we're now sleeping with scissors under our bed. We have two pairs, one on each side of the bed. And our lives have gotten a lot better in the last 2 days. You know, we're feeling better. We're doing stuff. We slept like rocks last night. Life's looking up. So,
well, that's great. I'm really glad to hear that in your experience, water and oil did not mix and all the oil came into a little ball all together in the middle of the bowl with the water around it.
That's not what you want. That means you have the evil eye.
But that's what oil and water do.
No, because it didn't do it on my head.
Oh, you mean Paul's the one with the evil eye?
Yes. You weren't even listening to my story.
Who's going to give Paul the evil eye?
Plenty of people. Why wouldn't someone give Paul a dirty look?
Why would they? He seems like a nice enough guy.
He's a great guy.
It'd be like somebody giving Sean the evil eye. Who's going to give Sean the evil eye?
Who knows?
Everybody loves Sean.
Sometimes loving people give someone the evil eye.
If you say so.
Legends throughout history say so. That's the whole thing. It comes from every culture in the world has a type of evil eye story. It's like a Baba Yaga or a boogeyman. Everyone has one.
Okay.
So anyway.
But you don't have one. Paul has one.
Yeah, but I did the cleansing stuff to me too, just to be sure.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that things are looking up.
Thanks. And in case they happen again, I have some extra coconuts here. So I'll do something with that.
All right.
Anything else?
No.
Do you want to contact us out?
Oh, well, I suppose. I know what that is. All right. So by all means, please send us your drive-by ghostings or your emails. You can email them to us, ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com. We are on all of the social medias. We are on facebook.com/ghosthuntinginnewengland, instagram.com@ghosthuntinginnewengland. We are on Twitter, tweet, @ghosthuntingne. We have a website. I've been doing some writing for it, but I don't think any of it has gotten posted yet. That is ghosthuntinginnewengland.com. You've done all of the contact information all season, and so suddenly I feel like out of place. Please leave us a 5-star review pretty much anywhere you can find us. Amelia will go out and find it and read it on the air and give you a big high five. If you're in the drive-through line to get a coffee or whatever, and you take too long, buy the person behind you coffee for them. It's just a nice thing to do. Yeah. If they order like $12 worth of donuts and stuff, you don't have to buy that, but ask what they got.
But how would you know at that point?
Because you ask. I will ask all the time. Like if I think it takes too long or if I'm just feeling like a nice person, I'll be like, what did the person behind me get? And if they're like $3 worth of something, I just buy it for them and I drive away.
Oh, that's nice.
You've never pulled up to a drive-thru and somebody in front of you bought your coffee?
I don't go to drive-thrus.
Oh, I'm sorry. It happens to me from time to time. And I got to tell you, it like makes my day, makes my week.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
One time back when they had like the tolls and people working at the tolls, I was at a toll and I was taking too long. And the guy behind me stuck his head out and he's like, I'll pay for her. Keep it moving.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that was really good. You remember like back in the day, you'd get to a toll and all of a sudden you'd be like, oh my God, I thought I had cash and I don't have cash and I have no way to pay this toll.
And you're like digging under your seat for a couple of
days. Yes, yes. Well, what I learned is that if you just went through it and you didn't like wait, you get charged $50. But if you like have them write you out a ticket, you only get charged $5, but then you're an inconvenience to everyone behind you. And anyway, one day I was very young. I was in college and I didn't have $50 to pay this ticket. So I just had to sit there and I was like almost crying because I don't like being that person. Anyway, now we all have Easy Pass. So there you go.
Right. Pay by plate.
Woohoo. All right. Well, join us next week while we talk to a ghost hunter. Please leave us a 5-star review. Thank you, Aaron Schilb, for writing our intro music. Listen to his podcast at Nashville Tour Stop Podcast, wherever podcasts can be found. Please, we're on Audible now, so tell a friend and leave us a review. And as always,
happy hunting.